passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And we are live. I am John Pollock alongside Brandon Thurston for your post daily news show for Friday, February the 4th. We have a earnings report to dive into, and we have the best man available to do so. He is WrestleNomics' own, a very busy Brandon Thurston coming off of one of his premium live events of the year. Brandon, welcome back to the post daily news update.
Thank you for having me. It's that time of the year, the holiday that comes four times a year. There was a WWE earnings call yesterday.
Tell me a little bit about your process. Take me into the world of Brandon Thurston around 4:30 p.m. Eastern time when these reports are dropping, because I don't know if everyone can appreciate the fact that this also coincides with AEW ratings time on top of it. Yes. So tell me a little bit about, like, do you have like a process in place of where you go? Cause this is a lot of information that's all getting dumped, and a lot of people are looking at you to kind of make sense of it all.
Yeah. So I took it easy on myself this time. I didn't plan on doing any live streams or anything, which is what I did last time. I tried to do two different live streams in succession while suddenly no one expected, well, at least most of us didn't expect talent to be released at the same time on November 4th, the previous one. But yesterday, I don't know how it is in Southern Ontario, but there's a lot of snow on the ground here in Buffalo. So I didn't have to go to the day job yesterday. I took a nap at like 1 p.m., got back up around 3 or so, I don't know. And I got ready. I have something on corporate.w.com that's doing a constant refresh every 30 seconds or so. There's a moment there where I was like, I was getting everything ready. I was getting some spreadsheets ready because I was going to put the new numbers inside like the revenue chart that I was going to post. And I was like, oh, it's 4 o'clock. Yeah, I got to do the Dynamite rating. But yeah, that's a lot. I got Dynamite quarter hours out there last night too, but, The Thursday afternoons when the Dynamite rating comes out, these days with the, or yesterday, those kinds of days with the earnings call, they're intense, but I don't know. I really enjoy them. Unless I make a mistake and then I'm swearing at myself, but otherwise it's intense and fun, isn't it?
We're going to get into all of the details of the report. I am seeing some comments, Brandon. If maybe you can increase your audio a bit. It sounds like you are coming in a bit lower than myself, but we will
crank it. Should be a little bit louder now.
That's coming in pretty good on this end. So okay. Hopefully that is reflected. But we can just dive right into this, and not to make this a pat on your back moment, Brandon, but your analysis going into this this earnings report when it comes to the earnings per share, the revenue projection. I mean, you were pretty on point here in a lot of different categories. We knew that this was going to be the most profitable, the most revenue for the WWE in their entire history. Of some of like the larger takeaway figures, were there any surprises that came your way on Thursday?
I expected live events to post a loss in operating income, which basically means their live event business, that isolated part of their business, would not be profitable. It was. I was expecting something like an $8 million loss, but they made, I think the operating income was $1.4 million. Average ticket price was better than I thought. I was pretty close on average attendance, though. The average ticket price is about $63 now. And One thing that we're seeing here is a lot of their consumer metrics normalize after We haven't really had a full quarter. We've had a couple of anomalies in Q2 with ticket price. That's just the WrestleMania quarter that had nothing but WrestleMania in it. And then Q3 was not a full quarter, and it was really benefiting from pent-up demand, so I don't think that was reflective of what the future would be like if I'm trying to make estimates, which I am. But now I was pretty close. So the analysts do EPS. So I try to play the game with them and do EPS. What's EPS? Earnings per share ratio, which is basically just a number determined by the net income, which is sort of the final form of profit. You divide all the net income by all of the diluted shares. EPS was, I believe, 70 cents. I thought it was going to be 68, but the analysts, the consensus, the average analyst was at 52 cents. So they really beat on earnings. They did on the previous quarter too. And they did on the quarter before that. So they've beaten on earnings a number of times in a row. This time though, I don't think the stock has reacted as strongly as it is today, where it's up by about 10% last time I looked. It wasn't really up in after hours trading yesterday when I thought maybe it would be, but it didn't really budge. But this morning it was way up. I don't know why it didn't react immediately and why it's waited until this morning to react. I've seen two stock analyst reports so far. JP Morgan downgraded their price target from the WrestleNomics account, from 62 to 58. It's trading at 52 right now, last I looked. North Coast posted what I think is a positive report. I haven't read it completely, but it's a good day for them, at least in terms of their stock is up. They set a new revenue record. They surpassed $1 billion in a year for the first time. They posted $180 million in net income, and they're going to break that record again next year. You know, we've been saying this for a few years now, and it's largely driven by the contractually increasing rights fees, most importantly in the U.S. for Raw, SmackDown, NBC Universal, and Fox. That's contracts going through September 2024, so they're going to continue to get these increases regardless of what their ratings are. And SmackDown ratings have been okay. Raw ratings, we'll see. We're still getting a sample here just after the end of football season. But a positive earnings call for them.
I think what you took away as well, like from the Q&A portion, is I think you have to be left with tons of optimism that they put out for you. It was not just, okay, we hit these benchmarks, maybe over delivered for some out there. But on top of it, it's not just this idea of waiting for these rights fees in 2024. Nick Khan made it very clear about the continuing licensing of the WWE Network, to look for those very soon. You could not have a guy paint a more pleasant picture when it comes to these replay rights, of comparing it to how confident we felt for the last set of television negotiations and the network deal with Peacock. And maybe the most important six words that some of these analysts took away, Brandon: why just limit it to two?
Yes. What do you think about that? Well, that was in the context of the Wells Fargo analyst, Stephen Cahal, was asking, he's kind of just trying to get confirmation that there were going to be two Saudi Arabia events, or excuse me, large scale international events in 2022. And they confirmed that there would be. That's not really any question to me that there will be. And then Nick Khan added, why just limit it to? Now, they didn't say Saudi Arabia specifically. They were using their favorite euphemism.
Yes, large scale live event. Yes.
It's been hinted to me that they're not referring to Saudi Arabia there, I would guess. I mean, think about 2018 when they went to Australia for that stadium event. That was the first Super Showdown, right? And then they reused that name for future Saudi events. I don't remember, but
right, yeah, it's been they've overlapped with the Super Showdown branding.
I would be surprised if it's something, if it's a third event. I mean, I expect that they will announce some sort of third big international event. I would be surprised if it's another event that's worth $50 million like the Saudi events are, though.
Yeah. We do have, you know, from the pandemic, there are like two outstanding shows that are owed to Saudi Arabia that I guess we were under the impression those get tacked on at the end. But certainly if you can get creative, I mean, that's a significant increase if you could slot those somewhere else. But I am sure they're looking at this model for Saudi Arabia, and if we can get anywhere close to that in some of these other regions, I mean, they are aggressively going to go towards that.
Yes. Yeah, so what other autocratic regimes need our entertainment broadcasts to the world? Yeah.
As well, we got premium live event viewership. So these are not so much viewership stats that we get, but rather percentage increases that were compared to their 2009 comparison points back when there were crowds, excluding the 2020 shows. I think we can certainly come to the conclusion that probably more people than ever are watching these pay-per-view / premium live events. But at the same time, you're also on a platform that is accessible to a whole lot more people than were the WWE Network or that were buying their pay-per-views back in that particular era. But at least painting that a lot of eyes are on these shows than ever before.
Yeah. Like you said, they're, more people are watching these peak monthly events than ever. As much as when I do my show, or maybe you guys do your show, we were talking about, you know, some of the problems with creative, and you would think that would be turning fans away. At least in some measures it is. And certainly if you go back enough years to 2016 and forward and look at a number of consumer metrics, especially when you're talking about asking people to spend money as opposed to watching something in their homes, you do see a lot of decline. But in the case of Peacock, Money in the Bank up 25%, SummerSlam up 30%, Extreme Rules up 20%, the Saudi event in October, 75% higher than one of their 2019 events there, Survivor Series up 25%, Royal Rumble this year, 45% higher than the Royal Rumble in 2020, which did have fans. So more people are watching than ever because there's Comcast had their earnings report earlier this week, or no, a week ago, something
last
like
week,
that.
Yeah.
And they reported 9 million subscribers plus another 7 million who have it as part of their Comcast subscription.
Seven million engaged.
Highly engaged.
Yeah, they pulled all engaged. Of them. They all said yes, engaged. Engagement is high from my free vantage point.
Yes. Well, they probably have data. Hopefully they're being honest and forthright. But it's like imagine putting it on a channel that just has more subscribers, but it's a lot more than, let's say, all of the WWE Network subscribers in the United States were watching any given pay-per-view. The highest that could ever be is 1.3 million for the 2018 WrestleMania, but at the end it had 1.1. So it's not tripling. You know, they say they've got 3.5 million paid Peacock subscribers who have watched WWE content since the move in March. Could mean they watched 1 second of content. We don't know. But a lot of people are watching it because it's a higher reach platform than a direct consumer service that's only for WWE.
Yes, and I think at the same time, when you are looking at all of these players that are trying to establish, you know, their streaming service and somewhat play catch up to others, it makes a WWE, you know, very desirable if they can bring a fan base over, and it's one that, you know, they present themselves as very attractive to a Peacock as they're attempting to grow this. And if you go by kind of Nick Khan's forecast of some of the kind of acquisitions that they expect that trend to continue, it's only going to benefit these content creators. And that's kind of the role that they are placing themselves in, to just extract as much money as possible for all these different emerging tech companies, media companies that are trying to find these eyeballs.
Yeah. So Nick Khan's opening statements, he gave his usual seminar on the media business, highlighting all the mergers and acquisitions and other things that he expects to happen. Discovery, Warner Media, he even noted that SeaWorld and Cedar Fair, which I guess is the Cedar Point company.
Yeah, I wasn't aware about the theme park acquisitions that are out there. I guess that's a very intense
and
game.
He highlighted the Microsoft acquisition of Activision, Take-Two, which is the parent company of 2K. They acquired Zynga and a number of others. Brandon Ross, the Light Shed analyst, asked him a question in Q&A, basically saying that you're strategic about what your comments are, kind of asking him, are you bringing this up because you want to do M&A? I'm still of the mindset that WWE is not looking to be acquired and will not be acquired during the lifetime of Vince McMahon, at least as long as he's healthy. So, I mean, NBCU would be the one that makes the most sense. I could see Nikon selling WWE to CAA. I don't know if CAA has the money for that. I have to look into that. But look at who owns UFC. Endeavor does, a talent agency. I don't know. I don't think he's looking to sell, but that was an interesting exchange. He also told Brandon Ross that he would have a special pile driver ready for him at WrestleMania if he attends.
Yes, so which no one picked up on the fact that it looks like this was the unbanning of the pile driver in WWE.
Yeah, Vince is going to have a talk with him about which moves are okay and not.
Yes. Yeah, it was this might have been the most Vince McMahon. It's a cameo appearance on these calls, but I don't know if we ever got one as much as we reimagine our business almost every month. I'm sure some in creative would say he reimagines this company every hour. And then it was a Nick, take it away. I'm out of here. That was it.
I just noted from the transcript, we reimagine our business every month. If not every week around here, like, yeah, you tear up the script.
No one's
going
to deny that.
Going
no.
Air.
That is confirmed. That is confirmed. The man is constantly reimagining things up until the last minute. Lots of reimagination, is going on.
But you definitely get the impression that Vince is, from his lack of comments on the calls, that he's not that engaged in strategy. I mean, the legend around Vince is that he works night and day and he never sleeps. And I'm sure he's doing a lot, but he really leaves it to Nick Khan, who everyone has the impression from Nick Khan that he's like this sort of visionary who really, really understands the media business. So sure, he should talk a lot. It's conspicuous though. It suggests to me that Vince just really, really defers to this guy and really trusts him. So yeah. And he's the one making these deals and giving them multiples on their previous deals.
Stephanie McMahon focused on kind of the advertising and sponsorship section of the company, and it grew. It was just over about $71 million for the year, and seems to be like very, very optimistic that this could be an area of significant growth for the company into the hundreds of millions of dollars in years to come, with, you know, a lot of the examples that we have seen in recent months with the tie-ins with Jackass Forever and Red Notice on Netflix. But most of all, it was the "We want pizza" chant that was conveyed for all of the analysts there from Stephanie McMahon as well, as she was going through her presentation.
Yes, the Pizza Hut Battle Royal was highlighted, which you know, everyone loved the Pizza Hut Battle Royal, at least on the earnings call.
Best Pizza Hut Battle Royal I've ever seen.
Yes, the golden egg. I'm surprised the golden egg was not celebrated more. The golden egg did coincide with Raw doing a pretty good rating the following night after Survivor Series, maybe because of the storyline of the mystery around the golden egg, who stole it. But yeah, she's talking about, this was brought up in Q&A too, that they think that they can make $100 million. What I take that to mean is in a year in this advertising and sponsorship line in their media division. So $100 million a year. What did it do in 2021? It did $71.5 million. So we're talking about, you know, an additional $30 million or so. The narrative with analysts, and it's not something that I feel like I have a tight grip on, but something that's been brought up by multiple analysts, is that they think that WWE is under monetized when it comes to ads and sponsors. I imagine that ties to the perception around pro wrestling, and that pro wrestling has always had issues trying to get valuable sponsors and increase its ad rates. So that's something that they like to talk about. And that's totally Stephanie McMahon's, her area. What's also included in that is YouTube. I would imagine it's the single biggest piece of that line. It's probably something like $20 or $30 million, probably on the high end of that now. YouTube just reported the other day that their ad revenue exceeded Netflix's subscriber revenue. So that's a huge business. We're broadcasting on YouTube right now. We're monetizing through YouTube. Well, their YouTube views were down. Well, their AVOD was down, their ad-supported video on demand, which combines YouTube, combines Facebook and a number of other social media platforms. And they called it out on the KPI slides, saying that, well, they took a lot of full matches off of YouTube and Facebook. And I think there's something else that was mentioned in the call out label too. But if you, I do see that in Social Blade data. Social Blade is this website that has a lot of social media data, including YouTube view data. And that's something that I've analyzed. It's in the new, industry report that I put out, that their YouTube views were down year over year, by something like, let's see, they did 15 billion in 2020 and they did 12.2 billion in 2021. That's still better than 2019. Maybe there's a pandemic effect on 2020 that with people indoors more, staying inside, maybe there were more people, engaging on YouTube. We saw that in, their online merchandise sales too, which is astonishing to me. But I guess that's another story. But yeah, YouTube was down. Even when you add in all the other non-YouTube video platforms.
Yeah. You know, that, yeah, they mentioned like the removal of full matches and not doing, well, we should say a main roster premium live event in December. They did do the War Games special, but yes. I guess obviously that's going to have a lot less traction than even a B or C level WWE.
Which given the growth that they've seen sequentially in that slide, I don't really buy that not doing one premium live event in December accounts for a big loss in YouTube views. And as far as taking full matches off, they're still posting new full matches. So I'm not sure what they took down. I would be curious to know what the story is behind what they're referring to there. Maybe they took some full matches in the archive down, to appease.
Which you wouldn't think are, but I mean, like, I wouldn't really know what kind of the data is, but I know, like, you've gone through a lot and have kind of talked about the idea that, you know, you're going to get the lion's share of your views in those first, like, that first immediate release of your, I don't know how much, you know, taking a full WrestleMania match that was posted 2 years ago down, is going to have such an enormous effect, but maybe a cumulative effect when you're talking, you know, a wide range of videos that apparently were taken down.
Well, in WWE's case, and I've been trying to track the YouTube data, more than ever here. And in WWE's case, about 30%. So I'm looking at a chart right now, looking at what I think is the last 7 days. So a given period of time. Assuming this is representative of what's normal, 30% of their views are of content that has been posted in the last 7 days, 30%. So the other 70% is what we might call archival content, older content. So they are getting a ton of their views from stuff that hasn't been posted in the last 7 days. Some of that's full matches, but it's hard to break down.
We could also look a bit more at the Q&A and, you know, again, we brought this up earlier, but the second day rights for Raw and SmackDown, I guess in the immediate future, that's one that they have, you know, it seems like Nick Khan feels very, very confident about their position here and that this will be, you know, one of their pretty sizable deals, I would imagine, for 2022, along with the continuing strategy with the network internationally.
Yeah. So the Hulu rights, which are being referred to as Raw rights. And I was like, there's SmackDown on Hulu too. And I just looked at Hulu and I was like, yeah, they have SmackDown on there too. So I don't know why they're just referring to them as Raw rights, but, that deal, it's, we don't know what that deal is really worth. I would guess it's worth something under 10 million, maybe well under 10 million, but there's a pretty good chance that they're going to multiply that. I would guess, they're hyping and it makes sense that there's a lot more interest in these next day rights to Raw, SmackDown, NXT, main event, than there was when those rights were dealt the last time. I'm not sure when they were dealt the last time. I think it was 2016, when there were far fewer streaming players. Now we've got all these linear TV networks that have gotten into streaming. I thought it was curious that in his opening remarks where he's talking about the value of live sports on streaming, where he's talking about things like, hey, look at the Premier League and the deal that they made with NBCU. It's a 2.7x increase, but the biggest piece of that is going to be streaming, presumably those games going on to Peacock. And he called out these streaming platforms in particular when talking about this. He said Amazon, Peacock, Paramount Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu have spent billions over the past year to bring top-tier rights to their services. I wonder if they're having at least conversations with all of those. Paramount Plus is not one that has come to mind for me for next day rights. That is the Viacom CBS owned Paramount Plus. But I've speculated Amazon Peacock would make the most sense because that would just close the window. Right now you can watch the latest episodes of Raw and SmackDown 30 days after they air. But, putting that onto Peacock would close the window. I've speculated maybe even Netflix. How exciting would it be for the investors as they made a deal with Netflix? And you can make the argument to investors or to Netflix that, you know, Netflix, you're not sure if you want to get into live sports. But I've argued that, you know, pro wrestling in many ways, shows that it is this sort of overlap between sports and scripted entertainment. We see that in a number of ways in the way that the economics perform, whether that's like DVR viewership, the attrition on TV ratings. And maybe this is a way for somebody like Netflix to experiment into whether or not they want to pursue more sports rights in the future. This isn't a huge expensive commitment for you, Netflix. It's next day rights. It's not live, but maybe you experiment with that and see how it fits for you. But, that seems less likely than maybe, Hulu keeping it or Peacock, or maybe even Amazon or ESPN.
Any strong impressions about, newly installed CFO Frank Riddick, who got to have his own presentation and was part of the Q&A as well? This was probably the most we've heard from Frank Riddick on a call.
Yeah, no, I don't know. He went over the slides that are very, very dry financial slides.
This was a very mechanical presentation of numbers yes. and stats. And it is a talent to be able to convey this in regular language and in an entertaining manner too.
Yes. Now the line that I've heard is, you know, Frank Riddick is a Vince guy. He's been on the board of directors. He's not exactly new to WWE. He's been on the board of directors for a long time. He might be the most tenured member of the board of directors, but he's no longer on the board of directors now, I believe, since he took the permanent CFO job. He was the interim CFO in the time between Berrios, George Berrios and Christina Salen. But, no, I didn't think there was much to take on Frank Riddick. I did notice he has a big high res promo photo that was in the streamcast window, so I'll have to catch up with that for when we put Frank Riddick's face on our slides.
He did I think this was like the last question answered, noting about the Peacock deal that it is, you know, a fixed amount of revenue, but there is an opportunity for more sponsorship money, but it's not tied to viewership. So at least giving us a little bit more on the Peacock deal there, that it's I guess there is more money to be made, but I guess no viewership markers that they have to hit to potentially add to that deal.
Anything? I think they're sharing ad revenue with NBCU on Peacock too. So there's that sort of flexibility. If they had a especially highly viewed PLE on Peacock, I would imagine that they would take in a little bit more revenue because of that.
Now, while most fans are awaiting the release of the 2K game next month, I know you were more so counting down until the release of the 10K, which came out on Thursday evening as well. Yes. Have you had a chance to peruse this, I believe, 121-page document? Is there any hidden Easter eggs in there? I know that the MLW lawsuit got thrown in there. There's always several interesting nuggets if you have the time to at least skim through the 10K.
Yeah, the MLW lawsuit is mentioned in there. I was skeptical that it would show up because I figure it's a sort of, in a worst case scenario, it's sort of a low value lawsuit relative to WWE scale. But it is mentioned in there right alongside the other lawsuits that have been there for a long time, including the class action shareholder lawsuit related to the MENA TV deal and the concussion lawsuit that's still appearing in their legal section of the annual report. But they always update the number of employees that they have, full-time employees, which is 870, which is down from approximately 900 the year before, which makes sense given all the layoffs that they've made and consolidation that they've done at the corporate level. And the number of talent that they have under contract, 250 or nearly 250 down from nearly 300 in the previous year, which is not a surprise given how many wrestlers were cut over the year. And I think those are numbers as of February, at least the employee one is. But no talent releases that I've heard of yet. But yeah, a lot fewer wrestlers. They had too many wrestlers for a long time. But yeah.
Do you think that they are at now kind of their manageable level? Do you think that there is, you know, not so much like a set figure, but certainly it got to a bulk number that they obviously want to come down from. But I would say, like, if you were a talent there, I think it has certainly changed just the culture in that this was not just like a one time a year series of cuts that were brought back. It was just constant. That I am sure that's always in the back of your mind about, like, what is that number that they reached, that there could always be one of those, you know, mass series of cuts, and it's not going to be just limited to one time of the year. It can happen anytime.
Yeah. Will there be more? I don't know. The big thing that increased the number of talent that they have in our contract is when they split the brands, they split the rosters between Raw and SmackDown in 2016. And then opening the NXT UK, Performance Center and that brand. It's curious that I don't think there's been anybody from NXT UK who's been in these releases. I wonder if there's something in the labor laws that in the UK that those talent there are subject to that makes it harder to release them. But it crossed my mind, especially with the news about, Jake Paul going after UFC for, you know, underpaying their fighters. And WWE yesterday reporting its most profitable year ever. Again, probably going to report another most profitable year ever in 2022. That I just did some really quick math and said, you know, I think UFC, according to the New York Post in 2020, UFC fighters are getting 16% of the UFC revenue. You know, you've got Jake Paul trying to be an activist investor of Endeavor to try to drive change here. But that if we assume, and I think this is probably aggressive, if we assume the average wrestler in WWE is getting $500,000 a year, and I think that's aggressive because of the number of developmental wrestlers who would drag that average down, but say $500,000 times 250 wrestlers, that gets us to $125 million. Which would be 11% of WWE's revenue, not to mention that they're paying their own travel expenses and there's no routine healthcare coverage or retirement benefits.
That's so much of the growth, Brandon, is also like they constantly, it's just this extraordinary IP that we have. This IP is these wrestlers that are like the subject of where they can expand. Like if their NFT market soars, I mean, it is going like that is all tied to these wrestlers, that is a huge part of their growth. And we just don't hear a whole lot about like the trickle down here or whether talent is entitled to any of these revenues in these new emerging markets. Will they be included in the emerging metaverse?
Yes. It's how much talent are being paid is a media story or a wrestling fan story. It's not so much an investor story. So we're not hearing financial analysts ask about it. And it's not, if you're a W investor, it's not, you're not economically incentivized probably to want to see wrestlers get paid more because that means W becomes less profitable. But it does, and then there's a report from Fightful yesterday that, W talent morale is pretty low, at least among some. Probably not low enough to unionize, but that's what's happening there.
It's very similar to UFC and MMA. There will be discontent, but I'm not holding my breath that there is going to be any significant actions, at least among the fighters or wrestlers in that department. Final thing here, I do want to touch upon the Dynamite numbers from Wednesday night, but just listen to the Q&A. Was there anything you were kind of listening for yourself that maybe was not brought up, or any questions you had coming out of the Q&A from any of the topics that were brought up by the analysts?
Sure. I have a few things. So the product licensing revenue, which the biggest pieces of that are action figures through Mattel and video games, console and mobile video games, that was up to $52 million in 2022 after that line had been in annual decline since 2017. And I would think that's at least partly driven by the new deals that they've made. And I think this is one of the areas where Nick Khan is positioned to help them with incremental revenue growth. This isn't media rights, but it's the things that they've announced recently, which maybe are not even being recognized as revenue yet, but the lottery tickets, the scratch-off lottery tickets, the NFT marketplace that's coming up, the Panini trading card deal that they just make, because I think they just left. Did they just leave Topps? I think they left. They left their other trading card partner. They just extended with Mattel. So that line of revenue has really recovered. Nikon referred to over a dozen scripted and unscripted projects based on our IP. So media projects, programming that's coming up. We'll see. I always think of, you know, the Lex Luger documentary and the Vlad, the super fan documentary that we're supposed to air on.
Yeah, they're just the sitting there, it sounds like.
I never did. So maybe it's things like that that are in store there. The NIL talent development strategy just did come up. Stephanie, I think they had already talked about it in the opening statements, but Stephanie put it over as a recruiting tool, talking about how few college athletes really make it to the NFL or the NBA, and that leaves a lot of really talented athletes behind. And Nick Khan chimed in talking about, hey, look at the examples of Roman Reigns and Goldberg and Big E and The Rock as examples of college athletes who were turned into major wrestling stars. I don't know. I had a moment watching the Men's Royal Rumble there. I know the Men's Royal Rumble had other issues surrounding Shane McMahon, apparently. But a moment there where you had Madcap Moss and Baron Corbin, you know, on the scene, and it looked like a pretty dire future of WWE in the NIL program. I'm sure they'll find a lot of talented athletes, but I really wonder if doubling down on athletes who don't have any wrestling experience, like they'll probably still leave a door open for wrestlers with wrestling experience to do tryouts and maybe get signed. But, you know, it's about giving Vince the talent that he'll be more likely to get behind. But nobody can say that part out loud. It's about capturing people who are more like Roman Reigns and Bill Goldberg.
But as they say, cards subject to reimagination. So that's right. We will touch briefly upon Wednesday's numbers, because these were certainly of interest, because it was a big promoted match on Wednesday night in Chicago. About 45 minutes on the back half of the show dedicated to CM Punk and MJF in Punk's hometown. They did 954,000 viewers, a 0.35 in the demo, you noting 456,000 viewers. So these would be their lowest numbers on TBS. And you had also included the quarter hour breakdown. And I mean, it was still the third number three position among cable originals on Wednesday. It's not a deflating number, but I would say given the stature of this match and how it was promoted, somewhat disappointing that they dropped to such an extent this week.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see what the Big Bang Theory number was that was leading into this. They started off with, so Q1 had almost 1.1 million viewers in it.
The Yuta effect.
The Wheeler Yuta effect. But it had John Moxley in there, who's one of their top personalities. I wonder if we'll start to see, and you know, the thing about the Big Bang Theory is a rerun, so Showbiz Daily doesn't report that, but there is a website called ratingsryan.com that will report on a pretty big delay, like a week later maybe. We will get some Big Bang Theory data, so we'll know what that show did. I wonder if this show is really going to be experiencing some ebbs and flows relative to how well the Big Bang Theory happens to do at 7:30. I don't see a pattern in these quarter hours that were like people tuned out. You had a strong Q1, which is what's been happening since they've been on TBS because of the lead in from Big Bang Theory. For the Punk and MJF match, now you could argue that people didn't show up and didn't tune in a number over a million viewers. It started at 900,000, went up to 950, and about half of that is in the demo. But yeah, this was by far the lowest number on TBS, the lowest since December 15th. It looks more like a TNT number.
And it was also like male viewership. Like that was seemed to be the big decrease in 18 to 49 and 18 to 34. And this just seemed, you know, this match between Punk and MJF, almost seemed like a love letter at times to, fans of, ROH of the mid 2000s as well in certain spots as well.
Yes. The Pepsi plunge off the top rope.
Yes. Well, coming up tonight, we've got SmackDown and Rampage. Wei and I will be live tonight at 11:15 p.m. Eastern time for all patrons to go through both of those shows. But coming up this weekend, we have WrestleNomics Radio with Brandon and Chris. And I do want to give you a chance, Brandon, to let everybody know about the 2021 Wrestling Industry Report that you dropped this week. An extensive, an exhaustive breakdown of the entire professional wrestling business for 2021 that is available to your patrons or those that want to support through PayHip. But this is an invaluable resource, I would say, for people in the industry and for those following it.
Yeah, it's you get access to it if you're a patron, patreon.com/WrestleNomics for the $5 a month subscription, or for $5.99 through PayHip. So I've been doing this. This is the third year in a row that I've been doing this, and it consumes my January every year so far. But yeah, we time it so that it's coming out in this week when there's the WWE annual report coming out. What I think people will find particularly interesting, wrestling fans, is everyone wants to know what AEW is really making. I've got, revenue estimates in detail for what I think AEW is making in 2020 and 2021. Something like $84 million in 2021. And we just talked about what WWE makes. That's $1.1 billion. So less than a tenth of what WWE makes. But there's a ton of charts, 71 slides. There's a ton of charts on Google web search, on ticket sales, on TV ratings across all the various demographics throughout the full year. YouTube views over the years, what we know about the financial state of at least the three major companies, WWE, AEW, and New Japan, and some commentary at the end about what I think about the outlook of WWE and AEW's media rights fees.
I encourage everyone to check that out. It's a must read, I think, for anyone that wants to have a deeper understanding of the industry. We also had two super chats here. One, just a super sticker sent from the Louie guy. Thank you very much, Louie, for passing along a super sticker, not to be confused with regular stickers out there. And a question from Jamie Stalker. Do you think that the budget cuts brought the $950,000 to make it to a billion? Was that the aim? Just to get to a billion? Was this the deep-seated strategy, Brandon, behind all of these cuts to just get us to 10 figures of annual revenue?
Well, I think the talent cuts that they made, a lot of them in NXT, some of the main rosters, probably some big ones like Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. But I don't think the talent cuts made I think they still reach a billion without those talent cuts. I mean, think about a lot of them, like they say the November 4th talent cuts, they all, well, not all of them. Some of them had 30-day non-competes where they were still paid, and some of them had 90-day non-competes. So their payments were not even off the books, some of them, before the end of the year. It helps, but I think they still make it to a billion in the year. Maybe there is an overall strategy to cut costs to help them reach the target of a billion in revenue. And there were costs cut on the employee side too. In the spring, when the television, WWE Studios, and Advanced Media Group were consolidated, something like more than 60 employees were laid off. So that helps. That helps cut costs too.
Well, Brandon, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out to break down the whole year-end earnings report. You can catch all of his coverage at WrestleNomics.com. And of course, WrestleNomics Radio, part of the Post Wrestling Network. A new show will be out Sunday with Brandon and Chris, as they will be, I'm sure, diving more into all of the figures presented on Thursday and the year ahead for WWE, who after another year, they have made it past the finish mark. They're going to make it, Brandon. They are going to be okay. as they...
They've made enough money to survive for another year. Yeah, on Sunday with Chris Gullo, I imagine we'll be going through some audio clips from the call and discussing them in detail.
I look forward to it. That is it for us. Once again, we're back tonight with Rewind to SmackDown, live at 11:15 Eastern for all members at postwrestlingcafe.com. And that is going to wrap it up for another edition of the Post Daily.